Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 27th of June. Just a reminder that this is the last day our show will be at this time period on Monday of next week. Don't think we've gone anywhere. We've just gone to a different time period. Same show, different time. 1 to 3 is when you will hear the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network. We love the call-in aspect of this show. Everything will be the same. We're just moving into the time slot that will be vacated by the loss of Talk of the Nation. Sorry to see that program go. Always a fan of it. During our time period, On Point from Boston will be airing live from 9 to 11. On Fridays, it's 45 North from 9 to 11, and in the afternoon, Science Friday. So change. And there are other changes as well. We advise you to go to WPR.org for information about all of the changes. But please join us on Monday, 1 to 3. I hope we remember that. It's been a long time we've been in this time slot. Big news from the Supreme Court yesterday. It ruled married same-sex couples were entitled to federal benefits. And it declined to decide a case from California, effectively allowing same-sex marriages there. The ruling leaves in place laws banning same-sex marriage around the country, and the court declined to say whether it was a constitutional right, same-sex marriage. We're going to talk about these momentous decisions this hour of the program. We'll have two guests with us. Marcia Coyle is chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal, and Adam Winkler, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law, will be with us. We'll be welcoming your phone calls. I would imagine we'll have more than a few on this historic day. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We will also invite you to join us at Twitter. I forget that. That's @KDunnShow. Marcia Coyle, chief Washington correspondent for the National Law Journal. Hello, and thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
I'm sure that you were thinking before this decision, which way will this go? Which way will this go? So I must ask, was this momentous? Was this surprising in any way to you?
Well, first of all, in terms of it being momentous, I think it is in this sense. This was the first time the court faced this type of a question. And anything the court was going to say in either of these two cases was going to be significant in terms of the gay rights movement. Was I surprised? Well, okay. You know, I generally don't predict on the basis of oral arguments in Supreme Court cases, but I think many of us who sat through the 2 days of arguments on the Defense of Marriage Act and California's Proposition 8 thought, with at least Proposition 8, that we could see what was coming, because a number of justices felt that there was a serious problem with whether the court could reach the merits of Proposition 8 based on the party that was before them. And that party was the Ballot Initiative Committee that supported and pushed through to the voters Proposition 8. So that one I wasn't too surprised. On the Defense of Marriage Act, I really wasn't quite sure, you know, what option the court would take. There were a number of what we called off-ramps if they wanted to avoid getting to the merits. But on the substance of what Justice Kennedy wrote on the Defense of Marriage Act, it really was kind of amazing that so much of his comments during the oral arguments really showed up ultimately in the decision he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was a fascinating day yesterday, and I wish there had been cameras in the courtroom so that all of America could have seen what was unfolding.
Well, there were certainly cameras outside the courtroom, weren't there? There was an incredible amount of joy, not just there, but in many places all over the country. Some concern from people who didn't like the way this went. But for gay and lesbian people in this country, there was a lot of celebration yesterday. And for others as well who were supportive.
Oh, sure. And, you know, it's funny, Kathleen, you mentioned that because throughout the term, we never know on what day a particular decision was going to come down. We're told that a certain day will be a decision day, but not what the decision is. But when you get to the last day of the Supreme Court term, and you know that there's only one or two cases remaining, that was a signal to everyone who wanted to be at the Supreme Court that day, both supporters and opponents of same-sex marriage, to get there. And they certainly did show up.
Mm-hmm. Marcia, will there be at some point a decision by the Supreme Court as to whether or not there is a constitutional right to same-sex marriage?
I think probably there will be. I think the court will eventually get a case that asks them to address that head-on. But I think right now the court is content with what it has done with the Defense of Marriage Act, and also to allow the states to continue to experiment and let the debate go forward. Now, the concern for the states and their historical, traditional authority in the area of defining and regulating marriage really pervaded Justice Kennedy's opinion, as well as the majority's concern about equal protection and due process for gay couples. But I think the court really moves incrementally. That's one of the first things I was taught when I began covering the court. Yes, every now and then it's going to make a huge, bold decision. But for the most part, the court goes step by step, rarely gets too far out in front of the public on controversial issues. And these two decisions yesterday really were incremental decisions.
I was reading and hearing yesterday about what this will affect and what questions remain. There will be many decisions, many questions, I would imagine, for the administration to determine how they will overhaul the many, many volumes of law that deal with marriage in the United States. This has a lot of complicated ramifications, doesn't it?
Oh, it has huge complications. Mm-hmm. In fact, probably the easiest thing would be if Congress just repealed the Defense of Marriage Act. Right now, the administration, probably through regulation, executive orders, is going to have to sift through over 1,000 federal laws and probably twice that number of regulations issued to implement those federal laws to see where benefits and other government services are based on marriage. Marriage, the location of the marriage, or what happens if people, gay couples, for example, are married in one state and move to another state, perhaps a state that doesn't recognize same-sex marriage. I think Social Security is fine. That doesn't really depend, I think, on the location of your marriage. So I think there are just huge complications for the administration right now. It does seem like the easiest thing, although certainly not for this Congress, would be to just repeal DOMA.
So do you think there's any possibility of that happening or not?
I don't want to sound cynical, but I'm never sure there's any possibility anymore of anything happening in this Congress. Mm-hmm. It's the least bit controversial.
Well, there certainly were calls for there to be a constitutional amendment declaring marriage to be between a man and a woman after yesterday's Supreme Court ruling. Will that go anywhere?
I doubt it. I really do doubt it. Enacting a constitutional amendment is a long process. And even if Congress were to approve that, it still would have to go and be ratified by the states. It's a very long, arduous process. And again, I just don't see that happening in Congress. And I feel equally pessimistic about the ruling the day before the gay marriage cases when the court struck down a critical provision of the Voting Rights Act and said basically, Congress, you can redo it.
Mm-hmm.
And that will be just as controversial.
You know, a lot of people said that's not very likely. Did you find it ironic in any way, and tell us how so if you did, that we had this major, some would say, civil rights case yesterday, and the day before we had, some would say, striking a dagger in the heart of the previous major civil rights case, which was voting rights?
Yeah, I did, actually. I find it ironic on a couple levels. First of all, with Justice Kennedy himself, he was consistent in sort of a superficial sense in that in the voting rights decision, he joined the majority, and during the oral arguments as well, he spoke about the equal sovereignty of the states. And so his concern about state authority, states' rights, to be frank, also emerged in the same-sex marriage decision. But to me, what was ironic was, for example, Justice Scalia and the others who, in the voting rights case, joined the majority in striking part of a law that has been on the books for over 40 years, that in 2006, Congress compiled a legislative record of over 15,000 pages documenting continuing racial discrimination in voting in the states that were covered under the old formula, and refused to give deference to Congress's work there. And yet, he dissented in DOMA, feeling that the court should have deferred to Congress on the Defense of Marriage Act, which was enacted about 17 years ago without any congressional hearings, and was enacted in a panicked reaction, and truly a panicked reaction, to a Hawaii Supreme Court decision that suggested that there may have been a right to marriage for gay couples under the Hawaiian Constitution.
Oh, my.
And to me, that's very ironic. On the one hand, you know, refusing to give credit to Congress for something so fundamental as the Voting Rights Act, and yet deferring to Congress on the Defense of Marriage Act, which Congress clearly didn't spend any real time looking at what the ramifications of that would be.
So how would you explain that? Does that come to just the way a person has lived his or her life and what has influenced what their philosophy is on issues of, I don't know, of justice or of civil rights or of what goes into that?
You know, that's one of the toughest questions, and a question I'm always asked. It basically, you're saying to me, is it law or is it politics?
Right, exactly.
I generally respond, you know, by saying, well, we're naive to think that the justices approach every case on a clean slate, or that they've locked up tight all of their feelings and experiences. Of course they haven't. And they really are the sum total of their experiences in life and the law, and they bring all that to bear on the cases before them. Now, there are certain doctrines in place to help them check their biases at the door when they come to voting on these cases, things like stare decisis, respect for prior decisions. And some justices believe more strongly in those doctrines than others do. I don't want to be cynical and say that they ruled, you know, more by the gut than they do by the law. But on some of these really hot-button issues in which there may not be a lot of precedents to look back on, although that's not true in the voting rights context, believe me, I just don't, you know, it just does seem as though there are more gut feelings involved here, or there's a little more gut feeling than there is law.
Marcia Coyle is our guest, the first part of the show, Chief Washington Correspondent for the National Law Journal. Later, we will be speaking with Adam Winkler, Professor of Law at the UCLA School of Law. We're talking about yesterday's ruling, Supreme Court yesterday, ruling married same-sex couples entitled to federal benefits and declining to decide a case from California, which effectively allows same-sex marriages there, and they will continue pretty soon. What do you think? Here's our phone number. You may have questions about how these decisions will affect people in various states, because as Marcia said, this is complicated in terms of the number of rules and laws there are that deal with marriage in this country. So a lot of people have many, many questions. Feel free to call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. You can follow us on Twitter, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our lines are open for you right now. We'd love to hear your response to yesterday's Supreme Court rulings. Our number is 800-486-8655. Bill in Hastings, Minnesota, our first caller. Hi, Bill.
Hello.
Hi.
Good day. Hello.
Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Marcia, could you help me figure something out here, or attempt to anyhow? At least I'd like to have your opinion on this.
I'll try, Bill.
The White House chose not to support DOMA. And yesterday when I was watching C-SPAN, I noticed on the crawler down below that one of the reasons the Supreme Court decided to even take this case was that the White House did not support written law, as in DOMA. Is that somewhat suspect, or is that just one of the many things that they would have considered, needless to say, on whether they're going to grant certiorari and hear the case at all?
Okay, well, here's really why they granted review in the DOMA case. It didn't have so much to do with the United States' change in position in terms of now refusing to defend DOMA. The lower federal appellate court in the case, it was the Second Circuit, which is based in New York. It had struck down Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act. And whenever a federal appellate court strikes down a federal law and the government asks the court to review it, the court will almost always take the case. Now, you're right that it created a problem for the court, this particular case, because the government wasn't defending the law. And although the court took the case, it also told the government and the lawyers representing Edith Windsor that they had to brief and argue the question of whether they should get to the merits of the case, because there was no adversary relationship here. The United States agreed that the law was unconstitutional. Edith Windsor's lawyers agreed that it was unconstitutional, and the federal appellate court had ruled that it was unconstitutional. And under our Constitution, our federal courts, cannot hear cases unless there's a controversy. So that was the first question that the court had to deal with before it could reach the merits issue of whether DOMA Section 3 ran afoul of the Constitution. And Justice Kennedy, he said in his majority opinion that there still was a controversy here. The government still had a stake in the case, because the Internal Revenue Service had given Edith Windsor an estate tax bill of almost $400,000, and that bill was outstanding. And so the government had a stake, taxpayers had a stake in how the case would be resolved. The court also said, and this was less convincing, although you might have found that reason not really convincing, but the court also said that it felt it had the benefit of the opposite arguments before it because House Republican leaders had intervened to defend DOMA in the appellate court, lower appellate court, after the Obama administration decided it would no longer defend it. Now, the dissenters, particularly Chief Justice Roberts, felt that this was all wrong, that the court had never, they said, heard a case when there was no controversy, real legal controversy before them. But the majority, five justices, felt they had enough to move forward to the merits. I hope that helps.
Yeah, that does help quite a bit. Thank you, Bill, for the call. Jerry in Dresbach, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi. Do I have this correct that a couple, a gay couple married in Iowa and, say, living in Lansing, Iowa, one member of that couple driving to La Crosse and working at the federal post office in Wisconsin would have all the rights of a married couple relative to his job and benefits, could file a joint return, a marital deduction and so forth, and then a couple who lived across the line with the same situation could not. Before you answer, may I add one more thing? That my understanding is a lot of some large corporations, and I know even the University of Wisconsin had some difficulty because of their attitude towards gay members of the faculty mm-hmm. who were involved with stem cell research. And okay. they had to make special allowances for those people because they wanted to keep them in the state. Corporations also have difficulty retaining their valuable employees in the state when the laws are not hospitable. Maybe
Absolutely.
You can address both those issues a little bit.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. Well, it was a pretty complicated hypothetical. I think
yes.
you've been taking lessons from Justice Stephen Breyer, whose hypotheticals go on for seems like hours on the bench during arguments. But I think you've pinpointed the problems facing federal government going forward under what the court has now ruled. We don't know. I don't know off the top of my head all of the federal laws that are affected and all of the benefits that are based on marital status. So you're probably correct that there are going to be problems when one half of a couple that's legally married, a gay couple that's legally married, has to go to another state. You're absolutely correct that corporations were very concerned about this in terms of retaining skilled and talented workers. So all I can tell you is that it's all got to be worked out, and we're going to have to see how this plays out going forward. It does create, you know, some pressure on states that ban same-sex marriages, and maybe we're going to begin to see some reevaluation in those states as well. We're just going to have to see. It's a new world.
Mm-hmm. That was about to be my final question for you. So you anticipate that perhaps we'll see more states saying gay marriage is just fine?
Well, I think there is language in Justice Kennedy's majority opinion that may give supporters of gay marriage a little more leverage as they file lawsuits challenging the states that have bans. So I think we're going to see more litigation. And also, Justice Scalia and Chief Justice Roberts pointed out that in the majority opinion's concern about states' authority in this area, that may give opponents of same-sex marriages leverage in defending their state bans. So it's going to be fascinating to watch how this goes forward. Justice Scalia, in his dissent, said that he thought the court had imposed its view on this debate, and it should have just, he it should have just left the debate to go forward. But I really do think the debate is going to go forward and our conversation is going to continue, and that the court really hasn't stopped that here. Again, I think these were incremental steps. So we have a lot more to talk about down the road. I should tell you, the court issued its final orders list of the term this morning, and not surprisingly, it denied review in two cases involving the rights of same-sex couples. It denied review to Arizona, which had a law that said only married state employees were eligible for health benefits, and it had withdrawn domestic partner benefits for unmarried state workers.
Mm-hmm.
The court there had struck down that law, and the Supreme Court today refused to review Arizona's challenge. And then there was another challenge that came out of Nevada. It was a challenge to the state's ban on same-sex marriage, and the court refused to review that as well. That's not surprising, because I think, again, it's saying, let the debate go forward.
Mm-hmm. And so it will, and I'm glad you're watching it. Thank you so much, Marcia,
for being with us. Oh, it's been my pleasure. I enjoyed it. Take care of yourself now.
Thank you, and you as well. Marcia Coyle, Chief Washington Correspondent for the National Law Journal. In a little while, Adam Winkler will be joining us, Professor of Law at the UCLA School of Law. But as we mentioned at the top of this show, it was remarkable to see the joy on the faces of many people who are gay, lesbian in this country, who are married or who would like to be married. There were celebrations. Some took place on the steps of the Supreme Court where people had gathered early in the morning, and there were celebrations all over the country. It was quite a sight. We thought we would speak with one half of one of those couples that was before the Supreme Court, who happens to be actually from Green Bay, Wisconsin. John Becker is joining us now. He and his husband, Michael, were at the Supreme Court yesterday, and their picture was taken by, I don't know if it was initially Reuters, but it quickly spread to news outlets, and they were the front page of the New York Times online for a while, and Huffington Post, and just everywhere. So John, and it was a very emotional picture. John is an LGBT activist, writer, and blogger, managing editor of the Balerico Project. And he and Michael, his husband, as I said, are from Green Bay and have been working actively on these issues for a long, long time. And they're very young, so they will continue to work on these issues. John Becker, thank you so much for being with us. Oh, I got to press the right button. Hi, John.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, as always.
Thank you, John. I was so amazed to see your picture really became something that will probably be in history books years hence, because you were everywhere, you and Michael, yesterday. It was, you were the faces of history, weren't you?
it's starting to appear that way. It's strange to think of it in that context, but yeah, the photo that was taken of us really has seemed to strike a chord with a lot of people, and come to represent for many people a face of that day. So yeah, it sure seems to have spread like wildfire. I'm hearing from friends all over the country that this photo is in our newspaper, and it's just kind of overwhelming at the moment.
You were on NBC Nightly News, in case you didn't see it last night. It certainly was everywhere. Why were you there? Why were you and Michael on the steps of the Supreme Court yesterday, John?
Well, because we have been fighting for marriage equality since, we were married 7 years ago. Our anniversary was actually just before the Supreme Court heard these cases back in March. And we've been working for equality that entire time. So this issue is very intensely personal for us. And, we're there because we wanted to find out whether or not, for the first time in the course of our seven-year marriage, the federal government would finally acknowledge, the reality of our legal marriage and would finally recognize us as not strangers but as spouses.
Mm-hmm. So, in a way, it was a crossover to a different perception from the government and from the country, in a way, that you are legal, that there is something substantial, more substantial in the eyes of others, in the eyes of the government, about your marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the funny thing with marriage is, that it happens on the state level, but the federal government, in most cases, has to go by what the states decide, except that with the Defense of Marriage Act in place, that expressly prohibited the federal government from recognizing legal marriages of same-sex couples. So like you said, it was that state legality was there, but up until yesterday when the section of DOMA was struck down, there was no federal recognition whatsoever. So, yeah, it was very much about being legally recognized as spouses for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Our earlier guest, Marcia, was talking about this incremental way that this issue is being decided state by state, that the court appears to be wanting states to move that direction rather than deciding whether there's a constitutional right to same-sex marriage. Is that step-by-step approach okay with you?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously in an ideal world, we wouldn't have to be taking incremental steps because, you know, a person's civil rights shouldn't be up to votes, you know, or statewide constitutional ballot initiatives. But, you know, we live in the real world where, frankly, to be honest, I'll take incremental steps forward over no progress or steps backward any day. You know, victories are victories, and that's how civil rights are moved forward one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. There are so many laws that deal with marriage on a federal level, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. I'm sure there are going to be tons of questions as a result of these decisions, John. Is there a place where everybody's processing the answers to those questions?
My gosh. Well, you know, I think those conversations, you know, they were prepared for in advance of yesterday's ruling, but I think yesterday's ruling really sparked those conversations. Because, yeah, there are a number of avenues for, I'm sure, legal challenges that will be coming up, as well as, you know, a lot of questions about people who marry in states where, you know, like if a couple leaves Wisconsin, travels to Iowa or Minnesota, you know, and to marry and then comes back to Wisconsin, they would most likely, according to what I've understood, have the federal recognition of the legal marriage that they went into in Minnesota or Iowa. But obviously, since Wisconsin has a marriage discrimination amendment, no recognition on the state level. So, you know, that's a lot of tax questions that are set up. That's a potential lawsuit that's set up. There's all sorts of questions, and I really think that just like the rest of the country, LGBT groups and activists and allies are still, you know, churning through what these implications are of yesterday's ruling.
Yeah. And finally, you and Michael were married 7 years ago. It seems to me, John, as though on this particular issue, not that there haven't been incredible struggles and people have died for this, but there has been a change. There's really been a change, hasn't there? And you must notice it, although it seems like a long time, you must notice that.
Oh, absolutely. I, you know, that was one of the reasons I was so emotional yesterday was, you know, in 2006, when Michael and I were married, there was literally no place in the United States that would marry us because Massachusetts had marriage equality, but they were only allowing you to marry there if you were either a resident or had intent to reside. So Michael and I were in Wisconsin and we weren't living in Massachusetts. So we literally had to leave the country. We went to Canada to marry each other. And it, you know, it's a legal marriage, but it's not, you know, it wasn't even recognized in Wisconsin. So that was 7 years ago. And to go from that place to the steps of the Supreme Court and to hear for the first time that, you know, that the government actually views your marriage, your legal marriage, as something real, I can't put into words how emotionally powerful and how significant that is, not just for Michael and me, but for thousands and thousands and thousands of legally married same-sex couples across the country.
Well, you know what they say about a picture in words, and your picture says the words all over yesterday, doesn't it? Thank you. Thank you, John, so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. Always a pleasure.
John Becker, he is from Green Bay, Wisconsin. He and his husband, Michael, and John is an LGBT activist, writer, and blogger living in D.C. now and managing editor of Balearico Project. Adam Winkler is joining us in just a moment, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law. Wrote a very interesting piece yesterday on yesterday's marriage equality rulings that appears in the Daily Beast. Hamburgers, Not Human Rights? Provocative title for that. He will be with us in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A reminder, this show is Moving Times. On Monday, you will hear us from 1 to 3 in the afternoon, and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday as well. So make a note. On Point will be 9 to 11 in the morning. Adam Winkler, professor of law at UCLA School of Law, is our guest now, and he wrote a very interesting piece about yesterday's marriage equality rulings. We thank you so much, Professor Adam Winkler, for joining us. Well, this title, Hamburgers, Not Human Rights, you talk about the Supreme Court in 1964 in the Civil Rights Act's bar on racial discrimination, and tie that into yesterday's Supreme Court ruling. Why the title? What's the reference?
Well, that comes from a note that Justice Goldberg, back in 1964, wrote to one of his colleagues when the Supreme Court was announcing its landmark decision upholding the Civil Rights Act. But instead of upholding the Civil Rights Act because it was an important measure of protecting equality, the court had said that Congress has the power to impose this law as part of its commerce, ability to regulate interstate commerce. Mm. And Goldberg said, it sounds like the court's more interested in hamburgers than human rights. Mm. And there's a certain way in which that resonated with the opinions yesterday. The court definitely scored some major victories for LGBT rights and full citizenship. But at the same time, the opinion in the DOMA case was not written as an embrace of equality, but was largely rested on questions of procedure and tradition. Issues that are not necessarily central to the question of whether LGBT people should get all of the full rights that citizenship should bestow upon them.
You know, it seems to me as though that's the job of a Supreme Court justice, that you deliberate those kinds of questions, and we should know whether or not, as you suggest, they are fully committed to equal citizenship for all Americans, regardless of sexual orientation. Will ultimately they have to make that decision, or are they just going to let this incrementally go state by state and get the will of the people and have this move slowly?
Well, it is state by state now. So the court's opinions yesterday did nothing to require same-sex marriage be recognized in states like Mississippi or Alabama that don't want to recognize same-sex marriage. In fact, Justice Kennedy's opinion in the DOMA case is very much an ode to states' rights and states' autonomy to define marriage as the states see fit. That would seem to suggest that the state of Alabama or Mississippi can define marriage as it wishes. But I do think it's only a matter of time before these issues come back before the Supreme Court. They're not going to be able to avoid it forever.
What do you think would have happened, let's just do hypothetical for a while because it's kind of fun, if the justices had agreed that there was a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, what would have happened in all of those states, and there are a lot of them, where there is a ban on same-sex marriage?
Well, it would have changed the law in all of those states and required those states to recognize same-sex marriage. I know that Justice Ginsburg, I think that Justice Ginsburg was suspecting that such a decision could lead to a huge political backlash in the same way that Roe versus Wade led to a backlash.
Uh-huh.
She made a speech in Chicago just a few weeks ago after the marriage cases were heard in the Supreme Court where she said that Roe versus Wade went too far too fast, and no one would mistake Justice Ginsburg for an opponent of abortion rights. She just thought that the way to do it is for the court to go slow. That sent a signal about what the court would do in these gay rights cases. I think the liberals were fearing a backlash.
Hmm. And will there be a political backlash because of yesterday's rulings?
There may be. There's already talk now in Washington about having a constitutional amendment. I think those efforts are going nowhere. You know, the truth of the matter is the strength in politics right now has turned, and it's now on the LGBT side. After all those years of initiatives being enacted in state after state banning same-sex marriage, in November 2012, we had four states that had same-sex marriage on the ballot. They all went the other way in favor of same-sex marriage. So I think the politics on this issue are changing and changing rapidly, and I think the Supreme Court's decision, for all its legal niceties, really helps advance the political ball on same-sex marriage.
And I'm always interested in finding out why things are moving rapidly. Why do you think?
I do think that more and more people, as they consider this issue, are realizing that there's no good reason to discriminate against someone because of who they love in the privacy of their own home. A long time ago, they said, well, the reason why we want to integrate schools on the basis of race is because if white people get to know black people and black people get to know white people, we'll have understanding and acceptance. It's hard to say that someone is different and the other if they're a friend or a colleague. And I think with so many lesbians and gay men coming out and dealing with other people. Their acceptance is growing every day. There's not anybody who doesn't have a gay relative or know someone who's gay. In fact, even Chief Justice John Roberts had a gay cousin who was in the courtroom during the arguments over the Defense of Marriage Act.
Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them coming in on this. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Interested in your comments to read after the show on Facebook, or our Twitter is at K Dunn Show. Professor Adam Winkler, professor of law at the UCLA School of Law, who wrote a very good piece in the Daily Beast yesterday about the Supreme Court ruling, is our guest. And let's go to Ron in Grafton. Hi, Ron.
Good morning. I think it's going to be difficult for any state to deny married people coming into their state because the Article 4 of the Constitution, which requires that every state recognize, give full faith and credit to all of the actions of another state.
Professor Winkler.
Well, you know, that seems to be what the Constitution's text might suggest. However, there's long-standing constitutional doctrine that says a state does not have to recognize marriages consummated in another state where those marriages violate the state's public policy reasons. So it used to be the case when some states barred interracial marriage and some states allowed it. If you were married in a state that allowed it and moved to a state that didn't allow it, that state did not have to recognize your marriage. But I think there's going to be a lot of litigation over that. I think some of those old rules are going to be really challenged once again, because I think that as more and more states move towards full marriage equality, and in a mobile society where employers are often requiring us to move to a different place
right.
for jobs, we're going to see pressure on those rules.
Yeah. Well, it makes it all rather complicated, doesn't it? If you got married in Iowa and you moved to Wisconsin, and so now you're not really legally married in Wisconsin, it's darn confusing, and it just doesn't quite ring right, does it?
It really doesn't ring right, and especially because, as the caller said, the Constitution seems to suggest that there should be full faith and credit in one state for the things that happen in another state. But there's also concerns about state autonomy. In yesterday's Defense of Marriage Act ruling, Justice Kennedy really wrote that the problem with the federal law was that it interfered with state autonomy to define marriage. If people can go get married in California or let's say Nevada allows same-sex marriage and then return to any state in the union and force that state to recognize their marriage, in some ways that state's autonomy has been diminished.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron, for your call. Dave in Appleton, hi.
Hi, a similar legal question, but Wisconsin has a law that says if you go to another state for the express purpose of getting married there for a marriage that is not recognized in Wisconsin, then you return to Wisconsin, you can be subject to $10,000 fine, 9 months in jail, or both. So I'm wondering is why wouldn't someone go to Minnesota to get married because they want to avail themselves of the federal rights, because you don't have to be a Minnesota resident to get married in Minnesota. So they want to achieve their federal rights by returning to Wisconsin. They're not asking Wisconsin to recognize their marriage. They're asking the federal government to. Would they be subject to be thrown in jail, and does that violate equal protection, maybe even commerce?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not familiar with the Wisconsin law that you mentioned, but that does seem like a perfect illustration of the kinds of complications we're
right.
going to get now that the federal government has to recognize your same-sex marriage, but the states might not have to. I think that the battle really does shift to the states, and LGBT advocates are going to be working with state legislatures wherever they can to try to remove these kinds of barriers so that full marriage equality can be enjoyed by everyone.
And yet you have to have, we have such political divisions in this country. We have states, you know, like Minnesota, and we have states like Wisconsin that are governed and have philosophical differences that are quite profound. It's really hard to imagine how this is going to work itself out in radically different political climates.
Well, that's right. And LGBT advocates have already said that they're going to move on to a state-by-state strategy, try to switch as many states as they can from the don't allow same-sex marriage to the do allow same-sex marriage column. And I think that's going to be a successful strategy in a number of states, places like Oregon, Nevada, maybe even Wisconsin eventually, New Jersey perhaps one day, but Illinois. But it's not going to work in places like Mississippi and Alabama and Arkansas. And that's why I think it's only a matter of time before these questions over the constitutionality of bans on same-sex marriage will return to the Supreme Court.
How long do you think?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court has a case that's heading its direction maybe within the next 2 years. I'm not sure that the Supreme Court's going to want to take it, to be sure. We'll have to see how that plays out. But there is a case bubbling up from Nevada where same-sex marriage is banned, and a federal court recently upheld that ban, and that's probably 2 years away from the Supreme Court if the court wants to rule on it. But even if the court doesn't take that case, it will be only a matter of time before they have to confront this issue again.
Professor Adam Winkler is our guest, professor of law, UCLA School of Law, and we're welcoming phone calls for him about yesterday's Supreme Court ruling, two rulings concerning gay marriage. 800-486-8655 is the number, and lines are open. Alan in Clintonville. Hi.
Hi. Thank you. Well, I kind of is referring to the Prop 8 portion of it, but in a larger text. I don't understand. To me, just because a majority of people think something does not make that right. And I was kind of hoping that they would have totally struck down prohibition on gay marriage. It's like when you have a contract between two people, it does not matter whether they're a man and a woman or two men or two women under government. The only reason this is an issue is because of religion. And religion should not be involved in federal contracts or state contracts for that matter. And we need to separate that out, and everybody needs to be equal. And I appreciate the being able to comment on air. Thanks.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, you know, I agree with the caller. I would have loved to have seen the Supreme Court declare for once and for all that same-sex marriage is a constitutional right and that no one can be denied all the equal access access to equal benefits and whatnot. However, the court really went out of its way in the Defense of Marriage Act case to put in qualification, to say that really nothing in the opinion would require courts to declare bans on same-sex marriage unconstitutional, nor require courts to declare other kinds of anti-LGBT discrimination, like bans on gay adoption, unconstitutional. So the rulings were really an important victory and an important cultural and political marker of the progress of the gay rights movement. At the same time, the opinions were very limited in their scope and won't lead to a whole new wave of judicial opinions striking down anti-LGBT discrimination.
You, in your piece yesterday, said that this should give LGBT rights supporters pause, that Justice Kennedy rejects the argument of the Obama administration that all laws discriminating against LGBT individuals should be subject to heightened judicial review.
Well, that's right. So the Supreme Court generally takes these at the approach towards discrimination, says, look, there's some forms of discrimination we don't worry too much about. And then there are other forms of discrimination we really do worry about, things like race and sex discrimination. And where we see race or sex discrimination, the court says, we apply heightened scrutiny. That means we look very closely at the law and make sure the government only does it when it has really good reasons and only does it as little as possible. And the Obama administration asked the court to treat sexual orientation discrimination just like it treats sex and race discrimination. The justices did not agree with that sentiment, and that will really have a significant impact because the next case arguing about anti-LGBT discrimination, the courts will not apply that heightened scrutiny that the Obama administration had requested.
Mm. And yet there was something. You saw it on the faces of people all over the country, gay and lesbian people who are married or who want to get married. There was something incredibly poignant and significant, even though it wasn't as significant as it could have been, about what happened yesterday, don't you think?
Absolutely, and I don't mean to be diminishing what is a great accomplishment and a landmark and signal moment in American history for the progress of the gay rights movement. But it is important to take it with a certain grain of salt, to recognize what the limits are of the opinion. You know, the truth of the matter is, while we had a great victory yesterday for gay rights, LGBT people are still subject to discrimination in the vast majority of states in America, and the Supreme Court, while it made some progress, did not really do enough to stop that LGBT discrimination.
Thank you so much for being with us. We'll put your piece on our Facebook page, too. I thought it was really good, and thank you for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
Professor Adam Winkler, professor of law, UCLA School of Law, his piece on our Facebook page. It's worth a read. It's good. It's on the Supreme Court decision, and it is titled Hamburgers Rather Than Human Rights, with a historical reference there that is he talked about, but it's good to look at the history. Well, thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing a splendid show here with Adam Winkler and also earlier Marcia Coyle, Chief Washington Correspondent for the National Law Journal, and also thanks to John Becker for being with us. He and his husband were on the steps of the Supreme Court yesterday. And we are moving to a new time. I just want to remind you, Monday, All Things Political will be Mondays at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Clarence Page, syndicated columnist, Chicago Tribune writer, will be with us for All Things Political. 1 o'clock. I need to put that in my head, too. Now 9 o'clock. 1 o'clock. On Point will be at 9 o'clock. Starting on Monday, and please make the change with us. We'll have the same show, just, different time, 1 to 3. Thanks for your calls. Another hour coming up.